From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour was made 3 years ago when author J.D. Vance joined Fox News' Tucker Carlson. Vance was planning to run for the open U.S. Senate seat in Ohio, a race he would win a year later. And now, as you probably know, J.D. Vance is the vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party, running with Donald Trump. On Tucker Carlson's show, Vance was building on a theme that he had been honing, that people who have children are invested in America's future, while those who do not have children cannot be nearly as invested by definition. And in particular, he targeted the Democratic Party, which Vance claims is becoming almost exclusively childless.
We're effectively run in this country via the Democrats, via our corporate oligarchs, by a bunch of childless cat ladies who are miserable at their own lives and the choices that they've made, and so they want to make the rest of the country miserable too. And it's just a basic fact. You look at Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, AOC, the entire future of the Democrats is controlled by people without children.
I mean, what Vance did not say was that Pete Buttigieg and his husband were going through a long and difficult adoption process at the time. They now have two toddlers. Or that Vice President Kamala Harris has helped raise her husband's two children and is held in high regard by the kids and their biological mother. To Vance, Buttigieg and Harris are just childless cat ladies. And by the way, that's almost certainly a gay slur in Buttigieg's case. But let's focus not on the individuals here. The ideas promoted by Vance are what we want to talk about. For starters, he has said repeatedly that parents have a stake in this country. He would later endorse the idea that people who have children should have more voting rights and more voting power weighted against people who do not have children. Here's a clip from a speech Vance gave to an organization called the Intercollegiate Studies Institute.
Let's give votes to all children in this country, but let's give control over those votes to the parents of those children. When you go to the polls in this country as a parent, you should have more power, you should have more of an ability to speak your voice in our democratic republic than people who don't have kids. Let's face the consequences and the reality. If you don't have as much of an investment in the future of this country, maybe you shouldn't get nearly the same voice.
Well, for much of the past week, Vance has dealt with the kind of blowback to his positions that he did not seem to anticipate. He joined Megyn Kelly's show to say that he has been repeatedly taken out of context by an unfair media. Let's listen to that.
It's not a criticism of people who don't have children. I explicitly said in my remarks, despite the fact the media has lied about this, that this is not about criticizing people who for various reasons didn't have kids. This is about criticizing the Democratic Party for becoming anti-family and anti-child.
My intention this hour is not to take J.D. Vance out of context, and for what it's worth, I don't think the media has been lying about him. The media has been talking about his positions at length here, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to examine, just as an example, a policy that he really likes out of Viktor Orban's Hungary. We'll talk about that. The intention is to actually look at the substance, because there's a very good chance that J.D. Vance is the next vice president of this country, and just by dint of what's going on with Donald Trump and his health, his age, there's a good chance J.D. Vance is going to be president of this country. So let's talk about how he views this. We had a number of cancellations and changes to the panel in the last 48 hours. Let me introduce who is here. In a moment, you're going to hear from the Republican candidate for Monroe County Clerk, Peter Vazquez. Joining me in studio now, Stephanie Townsend's a member, has been a member of the Pittsford Town Board. Stephanie works in different capacities in this community. I guess we're going to focus on your work in government. Is that right?
Yes.
You're representing yourself only today.
I am representing myself, my constituents, in my political role as an elected official.
Thank you for being back on the program. Rachel Barnhart is a Monroe County legislator in District number 17. Thank you for being here.
And I'm representing my constituents and all the childless dog ladies out there.
Don't make me laugh at that. Childless dog ladies. Because you have got how many dogs now?
I have two dogs.
Two dogs.
And so that's been my joke since, there's a lot that's not funny about what J.D. Vance said, but we've been, my friends and I have all called each other the dog ladies.
I have made a very concerted, long effort to try to make sure I understand the perhaps the culturally conservative support for Vance here. And I want to be direct with listeners here. I want to try to explore this in as good a faith as I can. And I want to welcome any feedback that you have for what you've heard from the vice presidential candidate. We're not going to try to edit people. We want to really engage here because J.D. Vance says this is just about being number one, pro-family, and number two, calling out what he sees as a Democratic Party that is not. But he also was very explicit, Rachel Barnhart, in saying that if you don't have kids, you cannot have as much of a stake in the future of this country. What do you make of that?
Well, it's incredibly dehumanizing to reduce a woman to whether she has reproduced or not, to imply that if she doesn't have children, she has no empathy, no understanding, no stake in our community. And it is fundamentally wrong. It's immoral. And everyone should reject that kind of thinking.
Stephanie, what did you make of it?
I think that the phrase childless cat ladies says everything we need to know. It is misogyny, plain and simple. I don't accept the premise of his argument. And we could pull data all day long about how many adults have children, how many don't, why they do, why they don't. His claim is absurd. And under any other circumstance, I would find it laughable. But the polarization in our country has really slid into dehumanizing anyone who thinks differently from you. And to me, that's not only not laughable, it's dangerous for our democracy.
Well, part of his defense is that, look, he didn't mean to denigrate people who don't have children. He just wants to target his focus, he told Megyn Kelly, on the Democratic Party, which he says, Stephanie, is anti-family.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And look, for example, at the federal child tax credit. It is Democrats who wanted to expand, make the expansion that happened in 2021 permanent. That is a family-friendly policy. It is Republicans who blocked it. You look at public investment in child care to make child care affordable. It is the Democrats who predominantly are the ones who are advancing those policy solutions. Who is working on trying to make housing more affordable for everyone that definitely benefits children and families the most? It's the Democratic Party. So when we look at what policies are being put forward, what are child-friendly policies, it's not coming from J.D. Vance.
One more point on this before I turn to your colleague here. I think some Republicans would argue that, you know, take the federal child tax credit, which existed for a year and sunsetted. And a lot of parents, households would remember $250 a month per child, $300 based on the age of the child. But this is a three-year-old policy now that was very popular, but did not get renewed. And Mitt Romney was one example of a Republican who offered a different sort of flavor of it. He had some issues with how the parameters were set, but he argued for a child tax credit as well. And so maybe Republicans would say, no, we favor that. We just liked a different flavor of it. We just didn't like what Democrats are doing there. Do you buy that?
No, because I think that if it was just about what is the flavor, then there would be a willingness to come together, find common ground, and find a policy solution that everybody can agree on. And we're not seeing that. That's not the rhetoric that we're hearing from the Republican Party leaders. That doesn't mean that Republicans all agree with that. I have many constituents who are Republicans who I find common ground with every day. And the reason we can do that is because we haven't fallen into the dehumanizing rhetoric. And that's the kind of leadership that we need at the national level, at the state level, at every level of government.
How do you feel about his idea that, look, he's just trying to be direct and he thinks Democrats are anti-family?
Well, it's ridiculous for all of the reasons that Stephanie mentioned. both Stephanie and I have day jobs where we advocate for policies that put more direct cash into the hands of families, like the child tax credit, like child care subsidies, like affordable housing. And so it's the Democratic Party that is trying to support families, and the Republican Party that is has consistently blocked this in Congress, although it was Joe Manchin who blocked the expansion of the child tax credit, although he's, I don't think, a Democrat anymore. So there you go. But it is really frustrating to see people say that they're pro-family, but then when you put the pedal to the metal, they're not interested in actually investing in families to help them thrive. And the expanded child tax credit, which we've been talking about a lot, you know, that lifted 3 million kids out of poverty. And we saw it all reversed. So it's a policy choice to have families who are experiencing hardship. That's a choice that we are actively making in this country.
There are a number of actual policy positions here. So when we talk this hour about what the vice presidential candidate advocates for, it's not just one thing, and we're going to continue to work through that. Let me hit a phone call that addresses one of them, and then we're going to come back to childcare because we haven't even talked about this yet, but J.D. Vance has some very specific ideas about who should be caring for children and why he did not support universal child care. But let me get to, this is Gordon in Penfield. Hi, Gordon, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just curious if J.D. Vance thinks that, you know, single women who live with cats should have less of a vote, they don't have as much skin in the game. What about single men who don't have children? Are they equally going to be disempowered? I don't know what planet he's living on. And, you know, I'm a Republican, and I cannot support anybody who's, you know, irrational. And, you know, so I guess it's hard to know what he thinks.
Well, yeah, Gordon, thank you for the phone call. I actually tried to look up a little bit more background and context on what J.D. Vance has been saying. Most of what he talks about here is in regards to women. I will say that Gordon's observation is interesting because most of the time, it's true, he didn't tell Tucker Carlson, hey, childless Americans have less of a stake in the future. And I think that those men and women, he said, childless cat ladies. And he has done this repeatedly. He talks about women a lot. So I presume the answer, Gordon, just based on what he has espoused, is that if you have children, no matter your gender, that you have more of a stake in the future than he believes people who don't, and that therefore you should have more voting rights. How that would work, by the way, one idea that you heard him in the clip he talked about, literally you would count the number of children somebody has, and you would get, you know, essentially a vote for every person and then another vote for every child that you have. So, I mean, someone with five children would have six votes, their own and five children. That is the idea. Would it be both biological parents each get a vote? Do they divide it? I'm sure he would work on the details, but he doesn't talk a whole lot about men. And your hand was up right away, Stephanie. What did you?
I completely agree with you as well as with Gordon. Really appreciate, Gordon, that you are willing to speak out for rationality. And the absurdity of it does start to come when you try to start doing the math like you were just doing, Evan. So if if there's four kids in a household, well, who gets their votes? If there's two parents in the household, what about blended families? What about separated families? What about someone like me? I'm a mother through adoption. Do I get half a vote? Like it's absurd. And that's why I the absurdity of it is it makes me hope that he's not really serious about it. Because if you carry it out and try to come up with that formula, it is preposterous. But given the rhetoric, given the hostility, given the misogyny, I'm terrified by this kind of conversation.
Rachel Barnhart, legislator, the caller is asking about a gendered angle to this. Do you see it that way?
Absolutely. I mean, look at the people who are delivering this message. This is from the party that took away the universal right for a woman to have an abortion in this country. that had profound implications for women in a number of states. And that absolutely goes to the heart of a woman's freedom to choose, of a woman's opportunities. And it is absolutely none of their business why a woman does not have children. It's just none of their business, the decisions that people make in terms of what kinds of families that they want or don't want. And it's just, on the one hand, you want to say, okay, this is absurd. You know, maybe we shouldn't take this seriously. You know, what they always say about Donald Trump, oh, don't take him literally. But I actually think we have to, because of what we've already seen happen up to this point in regards to the Supreme Court decisions, in regards to laws being made in some red states. I mean, this actually is really scary. And that's why the stakes for this election in November are so, so high. You cannot dismiss. Oh, that'll never happen. That's what people said about Roe v. Wade. Well, it happened. What's the next thing that's going to happen?
Well, I take the point that we should take it seriously and even literally, especially because it's not just one soundbite about childless cat ladies. It is many different espoused positions on specific policies. Here's another example. Vice presidential candidate for the Republicans, J.D. Vance, admires Hungary's policies on family and children. He has spoken admiringly. This is from the Washington Post. He's spoken admiringly of efforts made by Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban to boost his nation's marriage and birth rates, including a policy that offers subsidized loans to couples who get married before the bride's 41st birthday. If the couple has two kids, a third of the loan is forgiven. If they have three kids, the loan is erased entirely. Why can't we do that here? Vance asked in a speech during his Senate campaign in 2021. How do you feel about those policies, those Hungarian policies I just read?
I don't understand how that is any different than the one-child policy that China used to have. It is just the flip side of the coin. You don't use public policy to control people's personal lives and to control their reproduction.
And if you want to incentivize people having children and having families, you implement the kinds of policies that makes it easier to have a thriving family and to access opportunity, such as child tax credits, affordable housing, subsidized child care, good schools, all the things that make being a parent an easier thing.
Yeah. Subsidized loans for couples who get married before the woman's 41st birthday. There's nothing in the Hungarian law about the man. Again, there's a lot of focus on women. I'm not trying to make light of this. It's just, you know, ever since Gordon's phone call, I'm thinking about a lot of focus on women here. But the idea of forgiving loans if the couple has more children, no, Stephanie Townsend, not a good idea.
That's not, to me, that's not the right policy solution. I think it is about investing in the public infrastructure that makes it possible for families and children to thrive.
Okay. Let me do this. I've got a couple more phone calls to take, and then we're going to hear from Peter Vasquez. And continue to encourage listeners who maybe you're hearing the vice presidential candidate and thinking, yeah, I mean, that sounds good to me. I think that makes sense. I want to understand that. I want to air that out. Because again, this is not just one flippant remark on a podcast. This is a series of remarks that is reflected in a lot of policy positions and could lead to future policy and legal changes. Lisa in Rochester. Hello, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hey, Evan. You know, you guys probably already know this, and it might be a little off topic, but J.D. Vance wrote the foreword for, it's called Dawn's Early Light, and it's the Heritage Foundation president, upcoming book, Taking Back Washington to Save America. And, of course, it's anti-women, among other things, but it's, you know, horrifically scary. And I know Trump is trying to distance himself from that, but Vance is right in it, boy. And, if Trump does become president, which I don't think will happen, guys, I don't. And something happens to Trump and Vance does become president, we're pretty much screwed if any of this can come to pass.
Well, listen, about the book, you're not wrong. He wrote the foreword for that book. The Heritage Foundation is behind Project 2025. Donald Trump said this weekend on Fox News in an interview, he said that he didn't really know anything about Project 2025. And then he said there are parts of it that he likes and parts that he thinks are crazy. But then he wanted to stress that he knew nothing about it. So he is definitely trying to distance himself from that. J.D. Vance a little less so. But maybe Donald Trump would say, well, J.D. Vance isn't going to be the president. I'm going to be the president. Is that okay with good enough for you, Rachel Barnhart?
Well, obviously, both things can't be true. Donald Trump either knows about Project 2025 and the parts that he likes and the parts that are crazy, or he doesn't know about Project 2025. And it is a really scary proposition. And I just have to wonder, why is this rhetoric even mainstream? Like, what happened to make it possible for me to be sitting here on the radio talking about limiting the rights of women to vote and denigrating women who don't have children? What is going on in our society right now that this is even something we're talking about that's mainstream, that a guy like J.D. Vance with these views can be a vice presidential candidate? I mean, I think we really need to step back and look at this trajectory. And I do believe that Americans are going to reject this. I think they're going to reject it very strongly.
Stephanie?
I wish I could be as optimistic as Lisa and Rachel. but I am at a point that I find the rancor and the vitriol to be dangerous. I used that word at the top of the show, and it really is where my mind keeps going. In part because the targets of this kind of hyperbole have shifted from national figures, who it is easy to portray as one-dimensional, because we don't have direct interactions with them, most of us, to targeting people, even in our own communities, who think differently than we do. We see this certainly on social media, but we also see it, you know, in almost any conversation about politics these days. And that the fact that this has infiltrated every level of government and civic discourse down to traffic on our town streets is, to me, it really makes me fear for the fabric of our democracy.
Let me get back to your phone calls. Kevin and Victor is next. Hello, Kevin. Go ahead.
Hi. First off, I am a cat lady, although I'm not a lady, obviously, but I'm an eccentric cat person. So I don't appreciate that part of his comments about that. But I don't agree at all with the idea that you should give weighted voting according to whether you have a family or not. But I really do appreciate the fact that J.D. Vance sees that we're really becoming an extremely unhealthy society, that having children is not cool anymore. I mean, I see it everywhere. A healthy society does have children, and it embraces children. And, you know, not to make this about abortion, but the Democratic Party is for abortion on demand at any stage, at any time. That's absolutely anti-child, anti-family. And to your guest, you said that China's position about one child is the same as Viktor Orban's position on just incentivizing having children. She says that's the same thing. Of course, that's not the same thing. That's just stupid. To encourage people to have children and to say it's a wonderful thing, will help you financially, that's a wonderful thing. To say if you have more than one child, you're going to have to abort that child, that's a horrible thing. It's like darkness and light. So, you know, shame on your guests for even trying to put that out there, because it's certainly not true.
All right, Kevin, hang there for one second. Let me, I'll let Stephanie respond first. We'll work backwards in the comments there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I find it very interesting, Kevin, even the language that you just used. We can disagree and disagree strongly on a policy and whether it's the best policy to pursue or not. But to call someone stupid because they disagree with you is just a mild version of the bigger problem that I've been talking about. I'm a mother. It shouldn't matter whether I am or not. One of the biggest policy advocates that we have in Monroe County is Assemblymember Harry Bronson, who sponsored the Child Poverty Reduction Act in New York. To my knowledge, he doesn't have children. It doesn't matter whether or not that doesn't matter. Rachel has as much investment in the future of our country as I do. But the fact is, I am a mother. I became a mother with great intention. And to say that I'm stupid because we disagree on a policy is, to me, the very problem we're talking about.
Let me just follow up briefly. I'll let Rachel jump in, and I'll let Kevin come back in if he wants to. I think his argument is, if you look at China's one child, that's anti-natalist. That is anti more children. You said the other side of the coin is the way you described Orban or what Vance was talking about.
Right, because I find that...
But he's saying they're fundamentally different because one is more pro more children, bigger families, one's anti.
I think they're both coercive.
Okay, so the reason that what you're saying makes them similar is they're both coercive.
Yes.
In different directions, but
yes,
both coercive.
They're both coercive.
And in your view, bad policy.
Right.
Bad for government to get into. Coercing either not having children or having children.
Yes.
Okay. Rachel, do you want to respond? He says right now we're at a time where the unhealthy part is it is not cool to have children. It is people have anxiety about having children. What Kevin didn't say, but what we have heard from people on this program is young people are thinking about the future of the planet and they're very concerned, and some are choosing not to have children for those reasons. And he said that's not a healthy place to be. And he at least thinks J.D. Vance is recognizing that that's not a good place for us to be as a society.
Well, there's a lot going on with what Kevin said. I don't like how he is equating women having reproductive freedom to being anti-family. There's no correlation between those two things. There's no evidence showing that women who have abortions for whatever reason are not having children. If there are countries around the world who have non-coercive policies to encourage families, Korea, South Korea, Italy, Scandinavia, recognizing that encouraging population growth is a good thing, particularly if you're experiencing decline. But they do that in ways that are far more healthy by supporting families through resources. And that is what we can do here in the United States through great healthy policies that support children and parents. And what we hear instead is this notion that we want you to have children, but then if you're struggling, it's all your fault. You did something wrong. And we hear these stereotypes and these narratives all the time when we talk about poverty and people experiencing financial hardship. And one of the reasons that the child tax credit wasn't expanded was Joe Manchin's thought that parents were going to buy drugs and alcohol with the money instead of support their children. This is a problem in the United States about how we view poverty, how we view families, how we expect people to care for each other. The social contract is essentially broken, and that's what we need to focus on. It's not women who don't have children who are the problem here at all. And in many cases, you have people who are very active in public policy, active in their communities, trying to support families through various ways. So I think Kevin is misguided at best. And there's just one other thing I wanted to say, piggybacking off of what Stephanie said about social media and sort of the rhetoric we even see locally. When I first saw, I'm a very online person. So when I first saw J.D. Vance's comments, I got to tell you, I didn't think a lot of it because, there's just a lot of stuff coming out of the right with Project 2025, and it's always something outrageous. And the other reason that I didn't think a lot of it is I've been a public person for 20 years here, and if not longer, and I've been online, you know, for 20 years. I have been getting comments about the fact that I am a single woman with no children for a very long time. I mean, a really, really long time.
This was not new to you.
No. I mean, it is the biggest insult ever, right? I mean, that when I even posted I was going to be on the show, I'm sure there were, I have a lot of people muted at this point on Twitter. I'm sure there were comments, you know, about that on there. So I am constantly attacked, constantly, and constantly dehumanized when I speak about any issue, particularly as it relates to, you know, schools or families. And it's a way to say, shut up. And what they do is they go at who I am, or they try to make it a character flaw. So this is nothing new to me. It's nothing new to me. It mostly comes from the right, but not always. Not always. I have gotten it from Democrats too. This is next level, and it's scary. But I still, believe it or not, I still am optimistic that the more people learn about this, the more they're going to just completely reject it.
All right. Let me ask Kevin if he wants to follow up briefly. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, okay. To the other person who said it, I called her stupid. I didn't call her stupid. She may be the smartest woman in the world. I said that what she said about Hungary and China was stupid. And it is stupid. It's absolutely I mean, anybody with any kind of decent thought on things would know that holds no water at all. They're totally different. One's darkness and one's light. To say they're the same is just wrong. And to the other person, I'm sorry, I don't know your names, but you said I'm misguided at best. Just right now while we're here, tell me what I am at worst, just from what the things I've said, because I don't think they're really that bad. I'm misguided at best. What is Kevin at worst?
Wrong. I tend not to try to, again, make personal attacks, but I think
I don't either.
I was trying to use language that was not you know, that was not a personal attack, but I really disagree with some of the things that you said, and misguided was my more polite way of saying that.
Okay, well, thank you. That's not so bad. Misguided and wrong. Okay,
Kevin, I've been called much worse. I just want you to know that, and you can call back anytime you like. I appreciate the phone call, Kevin. Before I jump to more phone calls, and I see the phone ringing again, you have all lit up the response here. There is a lot of engagement on this issue. People are paying attention. Rachel Barnhart is a Monroe County legislator from District Number 17. Stephanie Townsend, a member of the Pittsford Town Board. And the Washington Post did a little interesting rundown of this question about, are people who don't have children biologically of their own, are they not able to care about the country's future as much as people who do? And here's from the Washington Post. George and Martha Washington did not have any children of their own. However, there were always children at Mount Vernon. Together, they raised Mrs. Washington's two children from her previous marriage, as well as her four grandchildren. And George Washington sometimes lamented not being able to have children. There were some people were wondering why he was not able, and he wondered that himself. But he loved having children, although he was more the disciplinarian, and Martha was, by all accounts, a little less so. And they were kind of the yin and the yang there. And so you know what it looks a lot like? It looks a lot like Vice President Harris's marriage, when you think about that. A very similar situation where Kamala Harris did not have biological children of her own. She married Doug Emhoff. He had two children, I believe, and she has helped raise those children. Kirsten Emhoff, who is the children's biological mother, is very tight with everybody. In fact, they say it's a very, very – they all joke that they could write a book about it, how functional it has been and how much – the vice president has been an important part of raising those children. But what's interesting to me was that George Washington, in his initial draft in 1789 of his first inaugural address, before he excised this, he was going to talk about not having children. And his initial draft, he wrote that he thought it was an advantage for the country because they wouldn't have to worry about dynastic politics. Him not having children of his own, he said, "Divine providence hath not seen fit that my blood should be transmitted or my name perpetuated by the endearing, though sometimes seducing, channel of immediate offspring. I have no child for whom I could wish to make a provision, no family to build in greatness upon my country's ruins," he wrote, end quote. Not sure why that was taken out, but that's in the archives. So just another perspective. There's a lot of interesting perspectives on this, but George Washington himself, I'm pretty sure felt like he had a stake in the country's future, I think. Let me get back to your phone calls, of which there are a lot. And if I don't get through some of them now, we're never going to get to the end of this hour here. Nancy next in Leroy. Hello, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, women are taking a lot of vitriol from the right at this point in time, and I find it much unaccepted. But have we not heard Trump also speak about how if he wins this election, it'll be the last time anybody will have to vote?
Yes. And let me say, Nancy, I'm going to take a view of this that you may not agree with. This is just the way it hit my ears, and I'm one person, and I am sympathetic to a lot of different viewpoints on this. The way I heard those remarks was that Donald Trump was saying, everything feels existential right now. Elect me again. Things are going to be so good that 4 years from now, it won't feel all the stress of all of this terrible stuff. Things are going to be great. You won't even feel like you have to vote. It'll feel like a normal election again. That's how I took it. And maybe that's too generous in your view, Nancy. I did not take it as Donald Trump saying, I'm going to eliminate voting and you'll never vote again and I'm going to be president for life or leader for life. I know some people heard it that way.
I didn't think it was clear.
I didn't.
I listened to it
unclear.
Three times.
It was
and
unclear.
I could see both interpretations, yours and Nancy's, being plausible.
Okay. What did you hear, Stephanie?
Again, I think the ambiguity of it can lead to both of those interpretations.
It's probably not a healthy thing to say.
No.
For someone who wants to be president
not
again.
A healthy thing
that
to
if you
say.
Elect me, that we won't have voting in the future. That's not a healthy thing to say. I can grant that point. It hit my ears as him just saying, things are going to be so good. I'm going to be the best. I'm the best that you won't feel like you even have to vote. It's just going to be so good. Future's going to be great. Here come the emails from people who are not going to appreciate my interpretation of that. I'm always trying to be optimistic, everyone. Come on. Robert in Fairport next on the phone. Hey, Robert, go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. I think the issue that probably is the bigger issue here is that the birth rate for the U.S. Per female is replacement rate is 2.1. It's like at 1.6 right now. And we've never had a situation before where the population has actually contracted over time. I think that there, I mean, if you look at it locally, just look at some of the school districts here in Fairport. I think, you know, not all that long ago, you had a graduating class that was 500, 550. It's like 350 now, something like that. It's going to be interesting to see how society deals with a major population decline. And nobody's figured out how to move the population needle up. It's not worked in Japan. It's not worked in China. They got rid of the one-child policy,
yep,
and they
yep.
have not been able to move the needle.
Yeah, no, you're right on the replacement level stats there. But what do you think, Robert? What do you think is driving this change for more people deciding not to have children?
I think that part of it is doom and gloom about climate. I think that's part of it. And I think that part of it may be just the family, consumers. It feels like the emphasis has been removed from family life to other parts of life, you know, self-actualization and things like that. And I think that, I mean, we didn't have influencers 20 years ago, all right? So I think that that's part of what's happening.
Thank you, Robert. I'm no fan of influencers, I'll tell you that. I mean, but Stephanie Townsend, let me start with you. So Robert is concerned about the birth replacement rate, and his numbers, I think, are pretty correct as far as I've seen them. So does that concern you, and what do you do about that?
I think that the declining birth rate is an economic problem, and we need to figure out how to deal with that economically. Again, this is not because of Democrats. We are seeing a declining birth rate in many countries all around the world where there are very strong democracies. You know, so it is an economic issue that we will have to look at. And, you know, it's an economic issue that is, quite frankly, the economic solutions are far beyond my scope as a council member in a town of 30,000 people. I think that we need to deal with it as an economic problem.
Do you think generally
not
speaking,
as a reproduction problem?
Generally speaking, a healthier, stronger economy, especially for people who reach adulthood. I mean, I spent the weekend talking to people in their 20s. one who moved up here from New York City who couldn't believe how hard it is for people his age to find housing.
Yes.
So do you think that's a, you know,
absolutely,
a lot of factors here, but you think that's the core of it?
Absolutely. I think that is certainly a big core of it. And the Pew study that just came out last week certainly supports that economics are a major reason that people are either not having children or simply having fewer children. You know, look at something like childcare. The average cost of childcare for an infant in New York is $14,000 a year. That is more than a SUNY tuition for a year. You know, people spend 18 years saving to send their child to college, but we expect people who are younger, who are at the lowest end of the earnings ladder, to suddenly be able to fork over $14,000 a year for infant care. You know, that is an issue that if we would address and make childcare more affordable, make housing more affordable, then I think that you would naturally see some people having children or having more children.
I'm going to put a pin in childcare because in a minute I'm going to come back to something that J.D. Vance did say about that. What do you make, Legislator Barnhart, about Robert's point that we didn't have influencers 20 years ago? The culture is prioritizing the self, not the family. There's a cultural erosion that's contributing to the declining birth rate.
I mean, there are probably so many reasons, but I agree with Stephanie that this is about economics. It's very, very expensive to have children. It is so expensive. You have the child care issue. People in New York City are paying more for child care a month than they're paying for their mortgages or their rent. That is not sustainable at all. And when you have couples deciding whether they want to have children or not, you better believe that they're looking at whether they can afford to do so. And that is what we need to be looking at, is how do we support families? How do we support this kind of decision making? But, you know, the idea that giving people taking away the rights of women, the idea that giving women who don't have children, you know, less of a say in our democracy, the idea that that is somehow the solution is preposterous.
All right. So on child care, here's what J.D. Vance has said about child care. He thinks universal child care is, in his words, quote, a massive subsidy to the lifestyle preferences of the affluent over the preferences of the middle and working class. He cites some surveys that indicate that if you ask people what kind of child care arrangement they would prefer, a plurality of people who are not affluent would say one parent, we can afford to have one parent stay home, one parent is working. And J.D. Vance says, look, people don't want child care subsidies. They don't want to send their kids to daycare. They want to be able to afford to have one parent stay home.
So he's in favor of raising the federal minimum wage then, I suppose, too, right?
He is not.
I mean, how does this all work? It sounds to me like he wants women barefoot in the kitchen, and somehow that will magically work out for everyone. They'll be able to pay their bills and have lots of kids. I mean, this is a fantasy. It is incredibly misogynistic, and it is something that we all have to reject. This is not, if people want to do that as part of, you know, they want a mom to stay home and raise the kids, and, well, you know, so they don't have a child care subsidy, and dad goes to work, and if that's his solution, then you better raise wages to make that possible. And also, you can't mandate that anyone do that. We have freedoms in this country to decide what kind of life we want to live, what kind of job we want, and that goes for men and women.
Yeah, I think that part of our problem in general with public policy is we oversimplify things. There are so many ripple effects. So, you know, do some people want to have one of their parents stay home and raise their, you know, with their child and not use outside childcare? Yes. My brother stayed home with his kids until they went to school. You know, that's absolutely a choice that some people want and should be able to make. You know, my brother could do that because his wife is a teacher in a unionized school district and they were able to afford it, you know, but it's But there's so many other ripple effects. So if the solution is we need to get more parents to stay at home and only have one parent working, then that has major impacts on our economy. Mm-hmm. We're already seeing it. Why are employers so desperate for workers? It's because so many women dropped out of the workforce during the pandemic, and we have so much data to support that. You know, why are they not going back to work? Number one reason, from some data out of Cornell recently from the Finger Lakes, cost of childcare.
Hmm. Well, let me see how many I can get in here. Anne in Rochester has been waiting. Hi, Anne, go ahead.
Hi, Evan. The childless quote is cruel to lonely elderly women because they take a great deal of comfort from having a cat. And the quote is a graphic example of how brutally cruel Trumpism can be.
And thank you for the phone call. And let me just say, I hear you, and I hear how that can land when J.D. Vance says that, you know, we don't need childless cat ladies running the country. I can understand how that would sound cruel to you. And I do hope that anyone who needs to find comfort and companionship can find it where they want to find it and can make the choices that they want to make. So thank you for that, Ann. Jane's been waiting. Hi, Jane, go ahead.
Hey, Evan, how you doing?
Very good. Go ahead.
Good. Okay, since Trump, we've had him around for a long time now, and he has often said very insulting things about women, including calling us dogs and pigs. And I wish we would play some of those choice things that he said about women, because it indicates his misogyny. And right now he's looking for a scapegoat. Don't look at us Republicans. We didn't do anything. It's those women. And it's easy to look over and scapegoat women when you've got a lot of angry men. And I resent it. And I hope that, in a way, I hope they just keep it up. And every woman out there hears these things, and no way would they vote for Trump, because he's alienating us, and we will show you at the polls. Thank you.
Jane, thank you. Millions of women are going to vote for Donald Trump. But the question is, do comments like this, do policies like this, do choices like this swing maybe whatever sort of the undecided middle or whatever, are they going to move? Rachel Barnhart was more confident than maybe Stephanie Townsend on this.
Well, I mean, we're already seeing some movement in the polls here, and I think we have a real shot as Democrats to keep the White House. I think it's incredibly important, but we have to recognize that there are swing voters. We have to recognize there are people who are not blue, no matter who. They do not believe that that women will ever have rights stripped of them more than we have already. They do not believe that we will not be a democracy anymore. They do not believe the fascist boogeyman, so to speak. They don't believe it. And so they're really looking at this like they're weighing these two choices equally. And so we have to come to grips with that and understand that my vote isn't going to matter as much in this election as some of the people in the swing states, those swing state voters. So, but I think, though, that the more attention that is paid to Project 2025, which the Democrats have been doing a fantastic job getting that message out, the more attention paid to the things that J.D. Vance is saying, the things that Donald Trump is saying, the better our chances. But that is not a lot of the number one issue in these swing states is the economy. And so we have to message, what is it that we are going to do for you? what are the policies that are going to make your life better? And I don't think that Democrats have done a great job messaging the things that we want to do that have helped. And in fact, a lot of the things that helped people during the pandemic were taken away, like the expanded tax credit. And that has caused a tremendous amount of resentment among people who should be running out to the polls to vote for us. So we've got our work cut out for us, but I am optimistic. And I do think that the more people find out about what's going on, the more that they're willing to vote our way.
All right, about 30 seconds. What do you think?
The polarization and dehumanization in our nation is dangerous. Whether we're talking about those Republicans or those Democrats, we're talking about our kids' Little League coaches. We're talking about the home health aides who help take care of our parents. We're talking about our sheriff's deputies and our firefighters who protect us. We're talking about our neighbors who keep an eye on our house when we're on vacation and pick up the newspaper from our front porch. And we have to bring humanity and common decency back into our politics and into our civic discourse at every level, from the presidential race down to your town board members.
All right, Patricia and Irondequoit, I think may get the last word here based on time. Go ahead, Patricia.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to make some comments about Rachel's
You got to keep it tight. You got about 30 seconds, Patricia.
Okay,
go ahead.
Yep. All right. I've lived most of my life having to defend myself from the choice to not have children. And so this is just a confirmation of all the hassles I've had throughout my life. And it's offensive to me. And I certainly hope that in the election in November that we have change. So thank you.
Patricia, thank you for the phone call and for sharing your perspective there. And I'm sorry that you've had to deal with criticism for your life choices. I'm sorry. But what you've clearly heard, Patricia, is you are not alone there. And that is millions of people. It's millions of women. It's millions of people. Though the focus is often on the women. That's what we're seeing. I hope we can keep these conversations going. And my appreciation for our guests in studio. Stephanie Townsend, member of the Pittsford Town Board, thank you for being
here. Thank
you, Evan. Rachel Barnhart, Monroe County Legislator from District Number 17, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
We've got more connections coming up in just a moment.